This is an ABC podcast.
They put their lives on the line for us every day, but our young veterans and serving Defence Force members are also up to three times more likely to die by suicide than the rest of the community. Now experts are trying to figure out why. Hey, it's Dave Marchese with you on Hack, and we're getting into this Royal Commission into Veteran and Defence Personnel Suicides. Also coming up on Hack, do you think beer needs to be cheaper? Because it might happen.
Hack. One of the hard parts for veterans coming out of the Defence Force is that adjustment into civilian life.
On Triple J.
More than 1,200 Australian Defence Force veterans and serving personnel have died by suicide over the past two decades. A Royal Commission is now looking into those deaths, and it's travelling around the country right now. But they're also already worried not enough young people are coming forward with their experiences. Lou Hill looks into it.
One of the hard parts for veterans coming out of the Defence Force is that adjustment into civilian life, particularly if all you've known is the military and that close camaraderie and just the nature of the job that is required within the ADF, you can feel very isolated when you don't have that anymore.
Lachlan, whose name we've changed for privacy reasons, comes from a long line of service members stretching back to his great-great-grandparents. He joined the Australian Defence Force when he was super young, but after his discharge, things got pretty tough.
It's obviously affected me. I have a very good friend who unfortunately went down another path.
For many young veterans like Lachlan, joining the ADF and serving our country is one of their proudest moments. But the rate of suicide for those who have defended our country has been so alarming that last year the government kicked into action.
Today I formally announce that a Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide. We recognise the contribution and sacrifice of the men and women who have served our country and the death of any Australian Defence Force member or veteran is a terrible tragedy.
Jacinta Harris is from the Defence and Veteran Legal Services, and she says that the Commission's vital for veterans.
Younger veterans and younger people in defence are at a greater risk of suicide. For those under 30, the suicide rate was three times higher for female ex-serving members and almost twice as high for ex-serving males. The chance and risk of suicide is also significantly higher for those with shorter rates of service, which would again put young people in that risk bracket.
The Royal Commission is starting its second round of hearings in Sydney today. And there's been heaps of submissions from veterans, currently serving members, families and friends of the ADF. But what are they looking at?
It's tasked to look into a couple of areas. So it's looking at common themes among veteran suicide and within that specific risk factors. So looking at during the course of a service person's service, were there factors relating to their deployments or the way they were trained, the culture, and then going further, if when they leave defence, what happens to them when they leave? What issues did they have integrating into civilian life? Battles they had with the Department of Veterans Affairs, getting any medical conditions recognised and appropriately compensated. But it is really very broad, and anything that can help shed light onto why we are seeing this devastating rate of high veteran suicide.
The Defence and Veteran Legal Service say there is a serious underrepresentation of young people at the Commission, and there are very few young vets who have actually made submissions. Hack contacted some young vets who have been impacted by suicides but didn't want to tell Hack or the Royal Commission their story. Scott May, who is the president of Toowoomba RSL, reckons there are a few reasons why.
There's this hesitancy there where the information that the Royal Commission is trying to seek is from boots on the ground, first-hand experiences, yet the people that were boots on the ground going through those first-hand experiences do not have the skill sets in their toolbox to put forward a submission that they think is sort of sufficient to actually make an impact within the Royal Commission.
He also said that younger veterans may not be ready to speak out about their experiences.
So it's fair to assume that younger veterans might not be engaging with the Royal Commission on the level in which they realistically should be, because it's sort of involving them, because they're still at the very start of a traumatic rehabilitation process. Whereas our older veterans, our Vietnam veterans, they're getting towards the end of it. They've come to grips with their state of mind, and they've probably got coping mechanisms in place, and they've had them in place for the last sort of 20 to 30 years.
For those young vets who do want to make a submission, the Defence and Veteran Legal Services has been set up to provide free and independent legal advice.
There are ways to engage with the Royal Commission completely anonymously. There are ways to do it that protect you in your employment.
Lachlan, who you heard from earlier, is in the process of putting together a submission and urges others to do the same.
I or any other veteran can't expect change if we're not prepared to tell our stories and advocate for change. I'd really encourage everybody to engage with the Commission if you're unsure, and it's important that everybody has their say.
Hack on Triple J.
Lou Hill with that story. And remember, if it's raised any issues, you can always contact Open Arms. It's free confidential counselling and support for current and former ADF members and their families. And you can get them on 1-800-011-046. Or you can get Lifeline always on 13 11 14. We're hearing from you as well. And Emma has called in. Emma, your sister was in the Navy. What was her experience?
So she had a really great time and a really good career in the Navy. But at the time she was doing her service, she really struggled with mental health issues. And at the time she sought help within her unit and within her naval kind of pathway. She was advised officially that if she did go down that path, it would go against her record. And it was advised for her to say, well, if you sought help at this moment, and we did touch base with the psychologist, we would mark it on your official record. Wow. And we can't say if that would impact your future, but we can say it has to be documented. And so that's a really awkward thing, because when they're reaching out for help, they might be getting this kind of feedback, and that deters them from seeking help potentially.
Yeah, of course. And your sister, did she end up seeking help in the end?
In the end, she had to fund herself privately. Right. And we know DVA is very, very good at looking after their veterans if it's physical. And we know that they do protect their, you know, their people overall and past their careers. But for her at the time, she needed help. Yeah. I personally, as her support person, felt like she couldn't seek help through the path that was meant to look after her.
All right, Emma, thank you very much for calling in, telling us your sister's experience. We're going to talk a bit more about this with a young veteran. David Peterson was in the Army for 11 years. He's also spoken to the Royal Commission himself, and he's with me now. Dave, g'day.
G'day, how's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. Now, why was it important for you to talk to the Royal Commission?
I think I've worked in veteran suicide prevention in the past. I've been actively involved in ex-service organisations like the RSL. I've tried my part. I don't know the answers, but I think I have some part of the picture that I think is important for the Royal Commission to establish what is happening with our veteran community and our serving ADF members. And I think when I am an older veteran and I'm sort of at the end, people can look back and say, you contributed to trying to solve this problem.
Why do you think it is that we aren't seeing many young veterans or serving personnel come forward? We heard in that story that the Royal Commission is really appealing for more young people to come forward with their experiences. Why do you think we're not seeing that?
Well, I agree with Scott May, who's the president of the Toowoomba sub-branch of the RSL. I think younger veterans, it's pretty raw. Some of these experiences might have happened just still currently happening or has recently been in their memory. And as a result, they've had some challenges and they probably don't want to bring up that stuff again. But I also think on the flip side, that's some of the most valuable information that the Royal Commissioners can have, because it's so raw and so recent and fresh that the changes needed can be implemented based on their contribution to the Royal Commission.
So Dave, you spoke to the Royal Commission yourself. How was the process?
I couldn't recommend it more highly. There was always support available. I have someone that I am in contact with at the Royal Commission to assist me. I had a private hearing with a commissioner, went for about two and a half hours on a video conference. It was really, really good. I've had just this afternoon a follow-up call from the Royal Commission to check how I am after making meeting the commissioner. And it was a really positive experience. But I do know that there are some young veterans who are trying to make contributions through their local RSL or other organisation that's, you know, democratically elected, and they are facing some difficulty with these large organisations that were very recently opposed to the a Royal Commission, now trying to speak on their behalf without gaining their insight and soliciting their perspective. And so I think that's a real shortfall in the system at the moment, is that young veterans might want to contribute at their local RSL sub-branch, but their local RSL sub-branch isn't allowed to make a submission to the Royal Commission.
And Dave, what are you hoping comes out of this Royal Commission?
I don't care how much the Royal Commission costs, because if it saves one veteran's life, I think that's worth the money. But what I hope is this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for veterans and the community to bring a fix to this problem, and it's a clear problem. And I want to know that the next generation of veterans won't suffer the rate of death by suicide that my generation and the Vietnam veterans and the Korean veterans and the World War II and the World War I veterans, we've been facing this problem for 120 years, and it's our one chance to speak up, gain the insights of the entire veteran community and the broader community who support us, and then bring a fix to it once and for all. And that might mean that the government or the opposition, if they come into government, needs to sign off on all the recommendations being implemented from this Royal Commission.
All right, David Peterson, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
Hack. Saturday night drinks at the pub may soon be cheaper with a tax cut on Budget Day.
On Triple J.
Would cheaper beer at the pub be enough to get your vote at the election? Because the government's apparently thinking about cutting taxes for beer in half, and it'd mean about 30 cents off a schooner, and more government MPs are throwing their support behind the plan ahead of the budget next month. But not everyone's happy. The spirits industry reckons it's sexist because the vast majority of beer drinkers are men. And in a minute, we're going to chat with someone from the spirits industry. But first, I've got Richard Adamson on the line from Young Henry's. G'day, Richard.
G'day, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. I'm guessing you're probably a big fan of this idea to cut the costs of draft beer.
Oh, look, I'm also on the board of the Independent Brewers Association. This is not something that we've been lobbying for to date. It's been a move from the big brewers and from the AHA. Look, there's no doubt that pubs and bars have had a tough time over the last couple of years with opening and closing. And even just recently in New South Wales, I'd say that it was a Clayton's lockdown, the lockdown you have when you're not having a lockdown with the Omicron surge that we saw. So I can see why some relief to the hotels is warranted. Whether 35 cents a schooner is going to make that much difference, I don't know. I've seen it written that it will make the schooner 35 cents cheaper, but also it's $500 less tax that the pub is paying. Well, who's pocketing the difference? Is it going to go on the price of the taps, or is the pub's going to take the $500, or is the brewer going to take the $500?
Yeah, interesting. I'm wondering if you can give us a bit of a rundown of how much tax brewers like you guys have to pay to produce beer.
Look, we pay a lot, and let's be clear: the proposal is only on draft beer. It's not on all beer as it stands, and that's why.
So, like stubbies, cans, things like that, they're not included.
They're not included, and that's why it can be this can be focused on the on-premise venues, and I guess that's why maybe spirits are feeling excluded, because it's hard to differentiate between those products that they make that would be going to bottle shops as opposed to going to the pubs and clubs. Look, the excise is high, no doubt about it, but you know, last year we lobbied to get a $350,000 excise relief across all forms of alcohol production, and that was really to support the small brewers in their struggles that they have, and to get more jobs in the industry. That really wasn't about cheaper beer or cheaper spirits.
Because I saw the Brewers Association here in Australia says beer sales have like really plummeted during the pandemic by $2 billion since the start of the pandemic. The UK brought in some similar thing last year where they cut taxes. Do you think that this would get people back into pubs and venues?
Look, I'd love to think it would. I think the messaging needs to be a little clearer. I'm also supporting the pubs and bars, because they have done it extremely tough, and we've certainly seen it at Young Henry's with our sale of draft beer from pre-pandemic numbers. I'd say we're still only around a half at this stage of what we're doing prior to the first lockdowns coming in place.
Right. And what about the timing of this? I mean, are you sceptical? Do you reckon, just a pretty easy way of impressing voters before the election?
Potentially. I'd like to, as I said, the detail to me isn't that clear. I think I'd like to see probably more support of bars and pubs around, you know, surety for live music events and the like, you know, having their capacities and singing and dancing restrictions lifted. I think that would go a long way towards helping the pubs and bars in terms of their recovery. And I thought that was an interesting comment about sexism. Like, I understand that big brewers have been marketing beer to men at the exclusion of women for decades, but I don't think there's any need to perpetuate that stereotype either.
All right, Richard Adamson from Young Henry's, thank you very much for coming on.
My pleasure.
We're going to keep the conversation going now because we've got someone with us who isn't too happy with the plan as it stands. It's Greg Holland, the CEO of Spirits and Cocktails. That's a group that represents spirit producers in Australia. G'day, Greg.
G'day, Dave. How are you going?
Yeah, well, thank you. Greg, you're not happy with this plan to cut taxes just for beer. You've called it sexist. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, Dave, we're certainly right. We support a tax adjustments to the tax rate, and we support the cut to the beer rate, but our argument is, why would you do it for one category and not for spirits? Richard was talking about pubs and clubs, but there's restaurants, there's small bars where tap beer is not served. So it's only tap beer. So all those other venues, all the other, you know, there's 50,000 licensed premises in Australia, there's 6,000 pubs. So none of the other venues get a break on this. And it is sexist. I'm not saying the Prime Minister's sexist, but it is sexist because it's 50%, it's only addressed to beer, draft beer, where 50% of men drink beer and only 10% of women drink beer. Now, that's a lot of women who drink beer, but only 10% of women drink beer. And in fact, gin, vodka and pre-mixed drinks are all drunk by women. Or not all drunk by women, but two-thirds of them are drunk by women. So we just don't understand. Like, we've been having a constructive discussion with the government about how you can actually look after everybody in the hospitality industry, and all of a sudden now there's serious consideration just to look after one group of drinkers and one group of venues. Don't understand it.
Is there a big difference between the taxes paid by beer producers and spirit producers?
Oh, yeah, sure. In a standard drink, just to give a quick example, a standard drink of beer in a pub, standard drink, you know, single serve, standard drink, the tax on that's 55 cents. On a standard drink for a spirit, it's a dollar six. So it's more than double. And if this proposal went ahead, if I went into a bar with a woman or anybody who ordered a spirit, the difference in the tax rate between a beer and a spirit, if this goes ahead, the difference in tax will be 539% tax difference. Now, that is just making the situation just ridiculous. Why does one group of drinkers get penalised and another group gets a break?
How does Australia compare with other countries in, like, how tax is placed onto alcohol? What's it like here compared to the rest of the world?
In spirits, we're the third highest taxed in the world, right, in the world, and in beer, it's the fourth highest taxed in the world. So it is, you know, the former Treasurer Peter Costello called the alcohol tax regime in Australia a dog's breakfast. There's 11 different rates, even the spirits rate has got two different rates. As Richard was saying, beer rate, there's a rate for draft beer, there's a rate for low alcohol beer, there's a rate for tap beer. It's just crazy. And as I said, the beer excise is way below the spirits. So we just don't understand. So even in a, you know, ready to mix, alcohol content's the same, 4.5%, and it gets taxed at beer. If it's beer, 4.5% gets taxed at 55 cents, and it's spirit, because it's got spirits in it, it gets taxed at $1.06. Same drink, same alcohol content. Alcohol is alcohol. Should be taxed all at the same rate.
All right, Greg Holland from Spirits and Cocktails, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks very much, Dave. Not a pleasure.
True love is us sitting together on the couch and telling each other how much we care about each other.
On Triple J.
Valentine's Day. You're either very into it Well, you're very not into it, but either way, what better time to talk about love, you know? And what better person to do it than Triple J's resident love and relationship queen and the host of The Hookup, Dee Salmon. Dee, happy Valentine's Day.
Dave Mike Hazy, calling me a queen on Valentine's Day.
It's pretty romantic, right?
It's so romantic. Happy Valentine's Day to you too.
Hey, you've been collecting love stories from around the world for The Hookup. What is all this about? What have you been up to?
Okay, so recently I read a book called Love Stories, and it was basically a collection of short stories of love stories from around Australia. And I was super inspired by it, so I decided, you know, I want to do a similar thing and collect love stories for Valentine's Day, but I wanted to do it in a COVID-safe way. So I thought, let's just get chat roulette up. Talk to strangers around the world.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear you. What's your name?
I'm Juanto.
Maria.
Anastasia.
Polina.
My name is Boris.
Andre.
My name is Stephen.
Will. And you?
My name's Dee. I'm from Australia. Where are you from?
I am from Iraq, but live in Alexandria, Egypt.
Spain.
I'm from China.
I'm from the Philippines.
I am from Texas.
Texas! I thought so, maybe with your accent.
We're from Russia.
I'm from a radio station, and I'm talking to people on Chat Roulette about their love stories, because Valentine's Day is coming up. Do you have a story that you'd like to share with me?
I have someone in my life. I have someone that I love, but a love story per se, I don't think so.
When it comes to like love stories in my life, no, like honest to God, it's sad. It's a sad story. I love my father and that's about it. My mom, she passed away, so there it is. So other than that, yeah, I just got my poppy.
Love, actually, I'm really not the most, appropriate person because I'm an introverted person. I haven't been to any relationship. I haven't talked to that many girls or whatever. Just new to those things, even though I'm 23 now. It's really important for every human being to have a partner in his life that he loves, that he cares about, that he has passion for, that will stand by his side. It's really important for this, but of course there are many various forms of love. Like for me, maybe it's a little bit cliche, but I am more of a patriotic myself, so I had love for my homeland.
Yeah, back in my middle school, 15 years old, and there's a boy. He's like inspired me. Oh, wow. Turns out I like boys. And I'm trying to like get connect with him, but eventually he is like just stray, so it didn't work out. And that's the only secret love, is it called, story I have.
How would you describe the love that you had for him?
You just think of him every day, like it's stuck in your mind.
And so before him, did you know that you liked boys, or was it was him that made you realize that?
Yeah, it was him make me realize that. I never noticed, like, do I like boys or girls? I didn't have crush on anybody before that.
Yeah. And was it hard to hear that he didn't love you back and was straight?
Actually, it's for me like, okay, it didn't hurt me much. Because I think I didn't like love him that much.
Has there been anyone since?
Only like not in real life. There's only the boys I chat with on the internet.
Well, unfortunately not yet. Not yet, because yeah. We are saints and now we're just searching.
It's cool. Yes, it was cool.
Is there someone maybe that you like have a crush on?
Johnny Depp or Tyler, the Creator.
Famous people.
Would you say that you're in love with them?
No, but we really adore them.
I would say that it's my best friend. Everyone thought that we are like in a relationship, but we're not. Like I just chose to be her friend because I kind of feel like the best thing that I could give, or the best gift that I could give to her, is to be friend and to stay with her forever.
Okay, I can talk about my girlfriend. I'm 24 now and she's still my first love. We met like 2 years ago. She just came to our school and we're all in a dance club, and I'm like a teacher, and she's new and she just came, and I went there and teach her how to dance. It's weird for me because my classmate who has been a lot of relationship and I don't have any, and it's kind of weird for me, but met her and I think she likes me and things goes very well. We like be together in a month. That's the second day when we be together. I invited her to have some traditional Chinese food, and we just take a subway to which is very far from our school. And then I said I love her, and she said yes, and we just walk for 3 or 4 hours from the restaurant to our school.
When you hear the word love, what do you think love means to you?
I think love is just a natural thing for a person. And it just goes so natural and fluent, and I can't believe we have already been together for like 2 years.
That is such a gorgeous love story. I'm glad you found it.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It was so nice to meet you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Goodbye. Bye.
Hack on Triple J.
Oh, D Salmon, from the hookup, still with me. D, that was so, so nice. And Chat Roulette as well. I mean, interesting platform. I'd just be worried people were being a bit too romantic on there, if you know what I mean.
That was our biggest concern, Dave. Like, when we asked the big boss of Triple J if we could do this, she was, you know, a bit worried. She was like, a few red flags here, because obviously we know what Chat Roulette is famous for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but luckily, I didn't see a single dick, so...
Hey, well, just, romance is still alive, right? Dee, were you surprised by how many people were so open about their love experiences?
Oh, absolutely. There were some moments. So that whole process took about an hour, and there were some moments where I nearly had tears in my eyes because people were just being so vulnerable and open about like the loves of their life, but also like the heartbreak that they've experienced. And I just couldn't believe that they were sharing their stories with me, a complete stranger just on the other side of the world.
Now, you got this idea from the book Love Stories by Trent Dalton. Big book, huge success. What was the inspiration, if you can explain?
Yeah, so Trent Dalton spent 2 months last year in the middle of the Brisbane CBD, and every single day he just set up with a table and chair and a sign that said, "Tell me your love stories." And he got over 200 strangers to just tell him the most incredible, beautiful, sometimes tragic love stories. And that's what the book is, Love Stories. And I was just so inspired by this. And I was like, oh, I'd really love to do something similar for Valentine's Day for the hookup and for Hack and for Triple J. But, you know, it obviously had to be COVID safe. I didn't really want to go sit in the middle of the city. And we just thought, Chat Roulette.
Hack on Triple J.
Hookup host Dee Salmon there, and you can check out the latest episode of The Hookup, available now wherever you get your podcasts. And that's all we've got time for on the Hack Podcast for now. I'll catch you next time.